Hello, friends. Roto-World's Josh Norris, once again here with the Roto-World Football Podcast, the number one podcast in the universe. A few housekeeping notes before we get into the winning formula, as you see, that is the title of this episode, with one Rich Rebar. First, let me talk about the Roto-World Draft Guide. First, you can find it at rotoworld.com/draft guide. And I know we all love magazines. I remember buying magazines, going to bookstores, if those still exist, and buying a few, bringing them to my drafts. But as I go along with this, and you know, as I work for a fantasy sports company, I realize that magazines are 6 weeks old. That is not the draft guide. The rotoworld.com/draft guide is always updating. I know Rich Rebar can tell you that. And it has customizable projections based on your scoring, quarter PPR, three quarters PPR for you absolute savages out there, but so much more. I mean, auction. We have done so many mock drafts in the last few weeks, thanks to RotoPat, that you are covered from every angle. So be sure to check out, again, rotoworld.com/draft guide, and even think about buying the season pass. Second, thank you all for subscribing, rating, and reviewing. Obviously, the preseason is really, really, really about to kick off, and I'll have an early episode next week with Evan Silva and maybe a few others, just talking about the weekend that was, the preseason action. But we're playing for a lot of content, obviously, in August during your draft time to get you prepped and ready, but also once the season starts. So go ahead, hit that subscribe button. And if you really like what you hear, leaving us a rating and review really, really does help us out. Or even just tell a friend. Add a friend on Twitter nicely, kindly. Again, it helps us out. So without further ado, let's get to this episode. You know, I think it's important with all of the information that's out there, and it's so much because there's so much great work that people in this industry do, but it's important to find the meaningful points and data out there and what you should be looking at most, especially for people in all ranges and types of leagues. And for that, I want to bring in Lord Reeves himself, Rich Rebar. What's up, Rich?
Hey, Josh, what's going on? Yeah, I could definitely attest to someone that does a big bulk of the updating of the online draft guide that we've only had one game. There'll be two by the time people hear this tomorrow. One game has been played in the NFL with pads on that's actually, you know, counted. And I've been updating that thing every day because there seems to be news that has come out, you know, consistently that has altered projections or rankings or, you know, outlooks for teams. So that stuff is all getting pumped out. And, you know, I'm one of the leaders in spearheading that charge.
And again, I don't mean to keep on harping on it, but what, you'll buy a magazine for $6 or $9 or something like that. And again, we put out a magazine. I don't want to bash magazines, but as you know, we wrote all that stuff 6 weeks ago. You just wrote stuff about like Quincy Enunwa's replacement yesterday, right? So it's all quickly changing. And the best way to do that is the draft guide. And it's $20 right now, or you can buy it as part of a package with the season pass and get it for even cheaper. All right, Rich, let's talk about how these guys can actually win their fantasy leagues. You know, obviously you want to take the best players, but pinpointing the best players is obviously the most important aspect of all this. What I've been hearing a lot during this offseason, and this is how offseason discussions always go, we say, well, let's look at Frank Gore last year. He, you know, was the running back. I'm just throwing out fake numbers here, okay? He's running back 12 for the season. Yet, Rich, I mean, there weren't that many weeks of top 12 scoring running back weeks. I mean, you can insert that with X player at whatever position and say, well, he finished the year as blank. We shouldn't perceive them, though, as that wide receiver for the entire season, because this player and this game truly is a week-to-week matchup.
Yeah, 100%. I mean, analyzing weekly output should be how you consume fantasy output over season-long statistics, because it allows you to see how replaceable positions are while shaping up, you know, how you view your roster construction. I mean, this season is, I mean, it's understandable that it happens this way. I mean, the season ends. Football's a year-round product now. And when you have 7 months to only talk about this one event, and everyone's draft and a fantasy draft is an event, we kind of hone in on just looking backwards and forward as these seasons in bulk and consumption, even though we just lived it. Like, Gore is a great example as a guy you can say. I mean, he's been a PPR RB1 in just six of his past 32 games the past 2 years. But, you know, has been RB1 total in overall cumulative points, you know, in both years. Seasonal finish within the dynamic of where you finish in your overall scoring is just as much about longevity and availability as it is, you know, anything else in performance. You know, Jason Witten's another great example of a guy that just never misses time. So, I mean, he accrues fantasy points even though he doesn't score as high as the tight end ones, but he plays more snaps and more games than those guys. So his overall point total still gets carried along for the ride. So, I mean, you definitely want to be focusing in on, you know, how these guys perform in your lineup on a week-to-week basis, what you can expect on a week-to-week basis when you draft these guys, because it's not really about the destination. It's about the journey.
Yeah. And before we go any further, I do want to point out that Rich was on a podcast a few weeks ago by Late Round Quarterback, JJ Zacharyson at Late Round Quarterback on Twitter. It was an awesome podcast. So obviously I took some inspiration on that and trying to double dip here with Reeves a little bit. And we're going to hit on some of the same topics, some different ones. But obviously it would be a shame if I didn't shout out the Late Round podcast. And obviously JJ Zacharyson, and go check that out. All of his podcasts are tremendous. In its simplest form, its basic form, like fantasy decisions are, to me, based on 1, opportunity, 2, opponent, and 3, talent. And I feel like talent, the third one, drives about like 75% of all the conversation in terms of football. Would you agree with kind of that ranking and that tiering, and just why opportunity really truly is the most important?
Yeah, I mean, there's a blend. Opportunity is definitely what you want to focus on first. I mean, you know, to keep things simple, it's you want guys on the field as often as possible and guys that are being used on the field as often as possible. No matter what we dissect in fantasy football, it's always going to be a game about the same basically 3 or 4 counting stats. You know, yardage, touchdowns, receptions, if you're league, you know, that's really it. That's what we're counting, based on whatever position you're playing. Those are the what we're counting in fantasy football. And the only way you can get those is if you're on the field and being used on it. No matter how many kind of advanced metrics we create, I mean, it matters. Those counting stats are only going to be accrued through that opportunity that we're talking about. Efficiency is one of those moving targets in fantasy football. So it's not as sticky. So we like to look at opportunity, but there's also symmetry between efficiency and inefficiency and volume that's created. I mean, a guy like Doug Baldwin is never going to have a high target output compared to the receivers he goes around in ADP. He's always going to be around that 125, 130 range. The guys are around him, the Amari Cooper store, they're in like the 150 targets, the 155 targets, because you have a guy getting his targets in a really highly efficient manner from a highly efficient quarterback. Doug Baldwin is a guy that's caught 75% of his targets the past 2 years. He's the first player since Wes Welker to catch, 75% of 100 or more targets back-to-back years. He's not going to stack targets on a level of like Amari Cooper because he's really good at the targets he gets. It's not that his overall volume is something you don't want to attach onto. It's just he hurts his overall volume by being so good. Whereas someone like Allen Robinson last year stacked 150 targets, but they were really inefficient targets. I mean, an inefficient target is going to have a higher rate of creating another target. So you always hear that all the time. People lose yards due to drops, a quarterback, but it's not necessarily true. If you complete all those aren't totally lost.
Right.
Kind of moving on a tangent in another direction. But yeah, when you first look at a player, you want to look at the overall team opportunity first, and you want to project, multiple range of outcomes for these teams. If the Jacksonville Jaguars, we know what they want to do if they can win a game, to win games this year. So you want to divvy up a projection that says, if they execute what they fully want to do, what does this look like to their team? Then what if they fail? What does it look like? And then if they're just in the middle of their projected outcome, which they are like a projected 6.5 to 7 win team on most sites, what kind of game script does that lead to? Then you can have, once you have that top down view of what the team can do, you can start dissecting what that leads to opportunity, right, as far as specific players, and go on from there. I mean, Michael Thomas is another good one. You see often that, Drew Brees' lead target only gets about 20% of the team targets. That's not as much as a guy like a Dez Bryant or, anyone else, that goes around Michael Thomas, the guys that are pushing 25% market shares, 30% market shares. But 20% of the Saints targets, who's a team that's throwing 650 times per year,
yeah,
is still, equal to 20%, it's still equal to 25% of a team like the Dolphins. I mean, you look at Jarvis Landry last year, he had a 27% you know, a market share, but he had 30 fewer targets than a guy like Antonio Brown, you know, who had a lesser market share. I mean, it's still, so you want to look at that team construct from like a top-down view and projections and then kind of move from there and see where the opportunities are. But you definitely, like I said, the simplest form, guys on the field, guys getting the ball.
And how we're kind of perceiving it now, it's difficult to even talk about opponent, at least for me, because I think that there's so much change year to year. And you've even discussed it in the past of how truly 16 games, 17 weeks is like a small sample size. But so often we make like drastic conclusions about if a player is good or if he's bad. I mean, it's Matt Ryan last year. And if you could just like discuss a little bit about natural regression that's taking place, and if there are, and I know I'm throwing this out there as you, and I didn't prepare you for it, but if there's any natural regression candidates out there that you see this year.
Yeah. So, I mean, this slides into like our efficiency talk. So efficiency is not, it can move around. We know, like we said, you just brought up, it's a 16 weeks is an inherently small sample, but it doesn't have, football doesn't have a chance to course correct stats like an NBA or a Major League Baseball, just because the seasons are so long and there's so many opportunities. We're talking, like I said, just 16 games, and a lot of times these players miss, you know, games in the NFL. You know, compared to other sports, you know, the volume of missed games is magnified because there's so few. But while efficiency isn't so easy to predict, there is a way that you can kind of use it without, like I said, like you don't have to throw the baby out of the bathwater, and you can take, you know, descriptive data, which is what happened last year to a guy like Andy Dalton, or for like your example, a guy like Matt Ryan the year before, and you kind of can take that descriptive data and, you know, backwards engineer a predictive measure. You know, that's called, you know, simple regression analysis. Matt Ryan was a guy who was way under his career norm in touchdown rate. Everything else stayed peripherally the same. He just ran into bad luck throwing touchdowns. I mean, we all know touchdowns are kind of like a result. They're harder to, you know, predict. You can have all these things that lead to them, but you still might not get them. And that's basically what Matt Ryan ran into. Now, his regression completely went, you know, tenfold, and he had an MVP-type season. But that's a way you can use it. You know, guys like Andy Dalton is a really good example of last year. He was way under his career TD rate. And you can use it inversely, you know, guys, you know, completely over the mark. I mean, I've written a few articles this year on, you know, I've included it in all the positional notebooks, basically, you know, touchdown regression, positive and negative guys, you know, that you want to look at to target and maybe not inflate as highly, you know, based on their career output. So, I mean, yeah, it's like Tevin Coleman, LeSean McCoy, you know, Dante Moncrief, you know, guys like A.J. Green who obviously was tied to Andy Dalton, you know, it was impacted by Andy Dalton's, you know, kind of subpar, you know, below his career norm type season. So, I mean, those are all things that you can kind of take efficiency, apply to those big career numbers that we have to work off of and try to, you know, work off some, you know, simple regression analysis.
This might be an unfair question to ask you, but I'm going to ask you it anyways. So there are plenty of players that start the season extremely hot, maybe 4 weeks, 6 weeks, 8 weeks, what have you. Could throw out Marvin Jones from last year, can throw out Greg Olsen from last year. How many games in a row do you need poor performances before you realized, oh, okay, this is now trending in the wrong direction. This isn't a must play like it has been in redraft for me. I need to start looking and trying to improve or even bench this guy, even though he did all these things 8 weeks. And this is kind of skipping back to our week-to-week assessment. But I think that's really difficult, at least for me, because I always have a positive, you know, taste in my mouth based on what they did earlier on in the season.
Yeah, and that's where we talk about, you know, monitoring volume. So don't just look at how your guys score points. We know that they got in your lineup, so to speak. You know what I mean? You know, a guy like Dante Moncrief is probably a good example because he's a guy that you want to keep playing because he keeps scoring touchdowns. But when you look at his overall target numbers and his yardage and what was his opportunity truly leads to, you have to look and ask yourself, well, what happens when this guy doesn't score a touchdown? You know, what's he going to perform? And, you know, Marvin Jones is kind of that way earlier in the year. He was kind of really overshooting his opportunity, you know, by a great deal. And then there were some other ancillary things that happened to Marvin Jones along the way as well. But yeah, it's a lot trickier. I mean, you have to just completely not focus on what the amount of points you're getting, though. Fantasy points are what we strive for, but you have to look what goes into creating those fantasy points. And is the opportunity truly still there or isn't? I mean, you hit on it. I mean, probably the best example I can think of last year is Travis Kelce.
Yeah.
I mean, Travis Kelce was unusable for fantasy early football. On. You know, the first 9 weeks of the season. But I mean, everything was still kind of staying in line with his career peripherals. It's just that, you know, he went nuclear at the back end of the stretch, and Macklin's injury was only for 4 of those weeks. I mean, his market share went up extremely high for those weeks, but there were still three or four other weeks in that where he still just kind of recoiled back into his older production. And you know, there are other guys like that too, like a guy like Greg Olsen, inversely, was a guy that was really hot the front half of the year, and his opportunity kind of remained the same, but wasn't as useful for fantasy football. I mean, fantasy football has always been a game that's driven by pockets of production and being able to time that production, you know, in your lineup and when you have these guys on your roster. So, I mean, you can look back at a guy like Dez Bryant. He was a complete, you would call him a bust. If we look back at last season, you drafted Dez Bryant in the first round,
right.
Totality, you were disappointed. But Dez Bryant was a hot fantasy performer, like when it mattered most. I mean, especially in fantasy championship games, if you got to him. I mean, he had a 3-touchdown game in the fantasy championship games. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's a lot. There's a lot of minutia to go through that goes into what creates these league-winning players. And it really kind of overrates what the element of the phrase having to win your draft really implies. It's just that we overemphasize it because we have 7 months just to lead up this one event. It's all for us to talk about.
So basically the perfect play was Greg Olsen, then trade him halfway through the season for Travis Kelce, which
yeah, if you knew that,
holy cow, let us know and we'll give you a job.
Exactly.
Let's talk a little bit about touchdowns since you brought up Dez Bryant. I mentioned it. There are so many different, well, let's say stats first and measurements and everything out there. There's a lot of quality work, okay? But overriding, touchdowns still matter the most, don't they, Rich?
Yeah, I mean, if you're talking about until fantasy football scored differently and it's, you know, approached differently from that kind of dynamic, or if you're adding things outside of touchdowns to kind of reduce touchdowns, the influence of them, they are what matters most in fantasy football. I mean, let me run through a couple examples here that I looked up because I know you wanted to talk about touchdowns and I wanted to bring it up. If you're a running back at over the past 5 years, if you just scored a touchdown, you didn't do anything else, like you just fell into the end zone, you had a 79% chance to be an RB2 or higher.
Is this the Matt Asiata list?
Yeah, basically? Pretty much. Like, yeah, basically. I mean, there are other guys that did more than this fall, but if you just scored a touchdown, I mean, you basically had an 80% chance to be a RB2 or higher.
Wow.
And you had a 50% chance to be an RB1 or higher, just scoring a touchdown. You look at the RB1s in fantasy over that span, just 17% of the running backs that were top 12 running backs didn't score a touchdown over that span. To be an RB2, I mean, just 40% of those didn't score a touchdown. So you have to score touchdowns to really impact fantasy games. If you look at any fantasy, you know, performance week to week and look at just go look at your league and the wins and losses and just count up the touchdowns without looking at anything else and see which team had the most touchdowns, I guarantee you it's probably the winner because the way fantasy is scored. And it goes throughout all the positions. I mean, to be a wide receiver one, if you just score a touchdown to be a wide receiver three or higher, you had 86% chance to finish as a wide receiver three or higher. If you just scored a touchdown, that's it. And then it moves on to positions. You had a 40% chance to be a wide receiver one if you just scored a touchdown, a 70% chance to be a tight end one if you just scored a touchdown. And, you know, not scoring a touchdown can really thwart a good game, you know, from a guy, you know, that's why those guys that Dez Bryant, like you said, he's a guy that can have a 4-catch, 36-yard game,
mm-hmm.
but score a touchdown, and now it totally changes the dynamic of that game. Whereas you have guys like, say, like a Duke Johnson, he's not able to save a floor game. You know, if they run into a game where the Browns have, you know, good game script, he only gets, you know, 3 to 4 catches for 40 yards and adds on, you know, 15 rushing yards. I mean, you're kind of left holding the bag there. So, I mean, the touchdowns are a driving force of fantasy football. I mean, I would say that they're probably a little overemphasized. I get that they do have, like, it feels like real football. I get it. You know, having touchdowns mean something, the scoring points football means something, but touchdowns are only scored from really one sector of the field. You know, I mean,
yeah. Isn't it something like 78% of all touchdowns are scored in the red zone?
Over the past 5 years, 73% of touchdowns have been scored in the red zone.
That's and crazy then, when you think about it, because, I mean, there's, yeah. you know, 80 other yards to play, mm-hmm. right? But then 73% of all scores are just from the 20-yard line and in. Like, that's amazing when you consider it, and it makes sense, right? Now, what does that do for
right.
someone?
The closer
and this is just
you get.
An example, but like, I mean, and we always bring it up, but it's Amari Cooper, you know, someone who just does not convert his end zone targets. And obviously the 20-yard line is different than the 10-yard line, which is inside the 5-yard line, so on and so forth.
Yeah, I mean, we talk about the 73% of scores coming in the red zone, but then if you even dissect that, you know, 70% passing touchdowns come from inside the 10-yard line. Then for the rushing game, it's even tenfold. Like, guys aren't running in 20-yard touchdown runs, right, even 10-yard touchdown runs. I mean, they're not. You have to knock on the door to get a rushing touchdown. The bulk of NFL rushing scores, if you look at our, so once inside the 5-yard line, it was 52% of all red zone rushing touchdowns came from the 1-yard line. You know, that's it. Like, more than half, you know, of all the red zone came from one specific yard line on the field. So, I mean, it's one of those things where I think, like, we could probably look back on it and really dissect and make fantasy scoring a little more in conjunction of where all plays matter. Yeah. You know, people love the touchdowns, and it's why you live for your one guy to score a touchdown.
This is why there are 100 blurbs during this time of year of who will be the Patriots short yardage and goal line back.
Right. I mean, we just did a recording about it as well. I mean, it's one of those things. Like, listen, touchdowns are the lifeblood of fantasy football, and they're going to remain the lifeblood. And I have someone that's always kind of built my team around touchdown upside. And last year was kind of the first year I kind of got a little gray in that area because I got a little involved in zero RB. Mm-hmm. And it makes sense. And I'm all for zero RB. And I think it totally makes sense with that way the NFL is driven. You know, passing rate keeps climbing, running back opportunity keeps falling. We know running backs were inflated by like a big touchdown spike last year, and it kind of masked, you know, we've got all these guys going high again with, and a lot of running backs with limited bodies of work are going high this year. But last year I kind of got caught up into these value trap guys, the guys like Shane Vereen, you know, the PPR backs that I know we're going to outkick their value, and I just wanted to put in my starting lineup. But those guys have a very low chance of manipulating a fantasy week.
Yeah.
So I mean, I think that it's one of those things where it could be a trap. You definitely need low, high floor guys. They definitely matter. I don't want to get away from that, but you don't want to just have those guys be a weekly necessity in your lineup as well.
Yeah, and I'm guilty of that. Like, I'll use, sure, you know, the term receiving skills or receiving back for a running back and kind of use that as a safety net. Whereas, I mean, you just said that, I mean, their touchdown ceiling most likely is so much lower than someone that's just kind of a consistent and true running back. But I think we all got kind of caught up in zero running back last year, and that wasn't the year for it at all. So Reeves just mentioned zero running back. I will tell you all this, a little preview here. We have six different draft strategy videos coming out, along with 6 different must-haves, so be on the lookout for those. Obviously, check out different positional notebooks that Reeves has posted in the last, few weeks. So much content. Again, and check out rotoworld.com/draft guide. You won't need anything else for your draft. And we'll do our best to help you win. Just don't blame us if you lose. All right, Reeves. We'll talk to you all soon. Thank you so much.
Thanks.